the NFL podcast.
Wants to find Mark Sessler a new job.
Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. My name is Dan Hansis. I come to you from a virtual room filled with some heroes. The aforementioned Mark Sessler. Don't go anywhere, Mark. We need you, buddy. Now more than ever. And Greg Rosenthal. I mean, if you were to voluntarily leave the company to pursue other projects and you reached out for help, obviously we would help you on that end. But I just don't really want to pursue that even as a thought.
Well, I mean, these are either listener generated or it came from inside our own company, that message. And it said that it didn't say that I'm looking for a new job. It said the ATN podcast, I believe, is looking, hoping to find me a new job. So it's sort of an unsettling way to open a show that will probably wind on for 80 or 90 minutes, but I'll do my best.
No one said it means you have to leave this job. Maybe it's a Weiss, you know, deal where you get a side hustle. You start working for the Browns. You get that double stream of income, and suddenly, like, the whole Sessler household is just flying.
I mean, we know a few people that have worked for the Browns, and they're, you know, they're not far from us right now, Dan.
And it also doesn't always turn out well. You know, sometimes those stays with the Browns end under mysterious circumstances. What's that I hear in the background? Oh my gosh. That's, my God, that's Nick Shook's music.
Is this
Shook,
where I crash
the Browns?
Is this what where happened? I crush the beer cans and like dump them over my head? You know, I mean, I've been known to do that. Oh, well, you know. Some things are best left a mystery.
Wee, Shooky's back. How about that? You know, Nick, I was thinking,
what did Freddie Kitchens do to Nick Shook?
I know. We're going to have to get some drinks inside of Shook sometime just to get the lowdown on this.
Got
to
get him inside that chiseled body. Shook, I was thinking you are a rising star with NFL media. I see you on network now a lot. Your football writing is top notch. You have a striking appearance because of your well-built physique and your bald head and your fairly symmetrical face. There's a lot of things going for you right now, Nick. What we need now is to put together
fairly
some
symmetrical.
We need to put together some
it could
some
be
projects.
A little more symmetrical would be nice, but yeah, it's just
I had a few project ideas. Some and you could take this IP and run with it, and then of course if it takes off, you could just give me a producer credit and I'll stay out of it on the creative end, but maybe I just get a paycheck. Nick Shook, and that's kind of just you on various personal, domestic, global affairs that concern you.
Yeah, I mean, I like that idea. I get that a lot. You know, people think they're really clever when I'm like, wow, I say, well, I'm in a social setting and I say, wow, and they go, oh, would that make you perhaps Shook? Oh. Are you Shook?
Yeah, I was going to say, was that not the first time that you've gotten that as a potential programming idea? Or
I usually pat them on the back and say, you know what? I've never heard that in my life before. Thank you.
Pat them on the back.
Tough one.
How about
this
one?
All right, off to a great start, Dan. What do you got next?
Yeah, how about, it's just the start. How about Nick Shook Me All Night Long, and that's a sex and relationship podcast?
That one would take off on a different podcast network, I think. it would be dangerous, but in a good way.
And then finally, I just got Shook, Nick on earthquakes and other seismic activities.
I have experienced a few once living in LA, and we even had one here in the Cleveland area a couple summers ago that was so small you couldn't even feel it. But the news told you about it for 5 days. Because it's so rare.
That is a nice sort of breaking news element to it as well, where people would say, you know, we've felt something in the middle of the night. You know where to go. You go to where, you know, you have to suddenly start an earthquake-oriented podcast at 3:12 a.m. I like it. I love it.
Just imagine, like, here in Southern California, whenever there's a tremor, everyone runs to Twitter and says, earthquake, or you feel that, blah, blah, blah. Shook has a live link. It's a live stream, and he's breaking it down for 2 hours.
Like doing my Kornacki, I got my sleeves rolled up. I'm in front of some big board that's showing, like, you know, the Richter scale and the seismograph and where the epicenter was. Here's another one: Shook, Not Stirred, a podcast about mixology.
That's good.
That's
see, it's
solid.
All there. when you are blessed with the physique, well, you've earned that, with the that dome, with the fairly symmetrical face, with the mind that you have, and then the name to top it off, it's the off season and it's time to start thinking bigger. That's all, Nick.
I'm just lucky that when I shaved my head for the first time that I didn't have an oblong head, at least to what I can see.
So important.
Nick's I mean, you also, by the way, sound like... go ahead, Mark.
No, I was going to say, Nick, you could do a lot of things with Nick as well. Shaving Nicks and, you know, Nicks and razors, like a little shaving podcast. People with beards are very, you know, they're very trendy right now. The people with the fashionable beards, you could cater to them.
How about this? Shook about Nicks. And it's all about cutting yourself shaving and how to avoid that.
You know, I think this brainstorming session just produced a winner.
That's great.
On a more serious note, Nick, this is your first show with us since you so beautifully helped us handle recaps on Sunday nights. And, you know, you would come in and tag in for Chris Wessling last season, which was, you know, a very kind of difficult, vulnerable time for the podcast, and you know, especially as Wes was getting sicker and he started to worry about where it was all going. Shook was always there and always very versatile for us, and always cool to jump on whenever and fill in. And you do fill, you know, it's a very important place in the history of this podcast, Nick, and hope to have you involved in this upcoming regular season on Sunday nights, because God knows we need the help. But thank you for being part of that time in the history of the show, as difficult as it was.
Well, I'll tell you what, guys, ever since since Greg first hired me 7 years ago, I always wanted to be a part of this, and it's always been an honor and will continue to be an honor for every time that I'm able to join you guys. So thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks, man. I remember you were there on that I'll never forget that episode now, the last Browns win. Not the last Browns win ever, but the Browns playoff win where Wes kind of tagged out for you. Like that was an amazing show.
All right. Coming up on today's show with Nick Shook sitting in for the whole banger of an app. How long did you say, Mark? 80 to 90 minutes? We'll try to come in under that, but no promises.
I mean, 90 would be, I 90 to 100 is where I'm sitting at. Now we're 10 minutes in. I think we've got at least another 93 minutes to go.
Coming up on today's show, you know, we've talked about it. We talked about it last week, and in general, Greg's biggest off-season written piece on NFL.com is his projected starter series. And you would think during this time of year when things are a little slow that we would have been hitting it hard. And yet, we neglected the series. We didn't. It came up casually in conversation, but it never got its own seg. And now days and weeks have passed, since the debut of the series. We're now finally going to address it in a series that, in a segment we like to call
Projected Starters
Autopsy. Yes, Projected Starters Autopsy, where we dig through the corpse of Greg's brilliant series and share some takeaways of our own. Also,
slightly grisly, but I think that people are going to enjoy it.
Poking the corpse.
It took weeks to make up this sound drop, so it was worth the wait.
Also, we promised them, you get them. We share some of the iTunes reviews out there at the end of the show. But before that, let's hit the news.
I mean, let's face it. The Giants are coming off a worse week than Harvey Weinstein. And they're up by 14 points.
That's what we chose for Al. Come on.
Granted, it was not Al's finest moment. That would not be his "Do you believe in miracles?" moment. It might be the opposite of it. It might be the Unbreakable. It might be the Samuel Jackson to Bruce Willis moment in Al Michaels' career. But
it might be more like, "Do you believe in Mike Tirico taking over in one more year?"
Mike Tirico, hired by NBC several years ago, was always thought to be the heir apparent to Al Michaels. Now we're at a stage where Al is in the final year of his contract. NBC has the Super Bowl. It's in Los Angeles, Al Michaels' hometown. And now here we are in a situation where is Al going off into the sunset? Probably not. Al Michaels loves what he's doing, even at 76 years old. And this report from friend of the show, Andrew Marchand. NBC's Al Michaels has emerged as Amazon Prime's top choice to do play-by-play for its forthcoming exclusive Thursday night NFL package. The Post has learned the courting has already begun, with NBC an active part of the discussions that could include its top production people being part of a potential deal as well. Oh, according to sources, Amazon begins its exclusive broadcast of Thursday Night Football next season. Greg, it's Michaels is the target here, but there's also talk about Joe Buck and Ian Eagle. I love it. There's a weird Jay Leno announces he's retiring in 7 years and Conan's waiting to take over vibe going on. It's another NBC boondoggle potentially here, where Tirico has earned his shot and the old guy is still there, giving Al a final act to his career on a great platform. That feels perfect. I hope it happens.
Yeah, I love this. We've talked about it now for a few years. It's not that I want Al out of my life. Still think he's, you know, top four. You know, I want him to be on one of these primetime games. He's just taking, you know, he's just late career Joe Montana in front of Steve Young. Doesn't belong on that Sunday night. So perfect. Put him on the new Amazon and we fly. I'm into it.
But he'd still do the NBC Sunday night games this year, according to that report.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So Amazon doesn't start till 2022. So he then would segue pretty naturally. He gets his swan song at NBC. It's in L.A., as Dan mentioned. He gets the Super Bowl. And then he just moves to Thursday night, and Joe Buck doesn't have to work as hard in 2022.
Yeah, I mean, Tirico's very much feels like a New England-based Jimmy Garoppolo product, where you thought maybe he's the heir apparent, but the lead guy is just too good and staying around too long. And like the thing about Michaels is this: maybe he's not where he was like years ago. For me, he's still like the top of the mountain, and I would love to be his age and still passionate about what one is doing. I think that's kind of, there's these announcers that have been in our lives for like our entire lives. It's crazy. I mean, and he's the dude that announces like every sport. I love it. I find another part of this job is we must continually chat about other men becoming very rich, and you have to have the stomach for that.
I'm most curious to hear Al Michaels read like the ad reads or the information about streaming during those broadcasts being on Amazon Prime, and how he handles the whole concept of that.
You would think though they might be a little looser. I guess it's still an NFL partner, but you know, if the gambling shackles are coming off in general across the coverage of the NFL, you would think like Amazon would maybe be the one that pushes the boundaries a little bit, and Al would love to dive into that.
Sure, kind of like how in Major League Baseball they're using the minor leagues to try to figure out some rules to make the game go in a more expedient manner. Maybe the streaming platform is the setup for primetime and Sunday and Monday and all that. I like that, and I hope Al gets that final act.
One other little nugget in that, like, and it's not surprising, but they talked about Nate Burleson as perhaps the partner to whoever they hire as the play-by-play man, which is, you know, again, I think it's like his next ascension. But Amazon is like, we're not going to try to like put a bunch of kids out there. We're going to try to put together a team that is like one of the best teams around.
In other news, Lamar Jackson, in his three NFL seasons, which of course includes an MVP award, in 2019, he has operated almost totally out of the pistol formation. That's changing, we hear, in June. ESPN.com's Jameson Hensley reports that the offense in Baltimore this season will include plays with Jackson starting under center. Greg Roman, the team's OC, told reporters on Wednesday the change is coming to the team's approach. He doesn't know what the percentage will be or the extent of how much they're going to use it, but they're working on it and evaluating it every day. Shook, why do you think the Ravens are doing this, and do you think this is important or just a June non-story?
I think it could jumpstart their passing offense a little bit, and the reason for that is first, variety, but secondly, the boot opportunities and how well you can get him on the rollout and that sort of situation. It's more natural coming from under center with a run fake and breaking back to your opposite side than necessarily doing the read option type of thing where it's more lateral than it is gaining depth on your rollout. So I think that that's probably one of the goals of going under center. They also have a rushing attack that has proven in part because of Lamar Jackson's presence in that offense, has proven to be very effective. And coming out of some traditional sets, I think adds more unpredictability and limits teams' ability to potentially stack the box or try to game plan against that running attack.
Can't do what you did before the year before. It's like the history of offensive evolution in the NFL. If you do it, you're going to get stuck. Like once you get past the mid-90s to the start of the 2000s, and I think that was part of the Ravens' issue last year. Not that they were bad offensively. It was still a good running game, but they didn't really evolve what they do. You have to change in some way each year or else it's not going to work. And as long as they don't lose kind of the core of what they do, and it's not like they're not going to use his legs, and it's not like play action can't be effective from under center. It can be more effective, and they're a great play action team. So they need to have a few more flavors to throw out there each week.
I mean, I think it was like two seasons ago, they were appropriately lauded for bludgeoning teams with their approach. But last year, you know, they didn't have Nick Boyle. They tried to do that again. They were largely successful for parts of the season, but there were all these sideshows that we talked about on Tuesday with, you know, Lamar Jackson saying that the defenses were calling out plays pre-snap. Like, you know, that's the trick with the Greg Roman offense. And he said all offseason, we have to expand. I mean, I will say this, though. The Ravens social media team got a little too excited about the concept of this yesterday and put out, I don't know if you saw this Lamar Jackson passed to Sammy Watkins, and it was like an ultra duck. And all these people were like, why did you put that clip out there? Like, it did not help this messaging on any level. You have to go check it out.
You could look at it cynically and say it's a, you know, tacit admission that the offense was kind of going in the wrong direction last year, or you could just say, okay, this is smart. Yeah, like you guys are saying, you have to evolve. You can't just stay the same way. And imagine if Lamar is comfortable in this and he's got some better playmakers this year, you know, maybe his game takes a jump, and that would be very exciting for the Ravens. In other news, the COVID-19 vaccine. It's very important that we all get vaccinated, and there are some people in our country and that don't feel that way, and that is creating a level of tension in our nation. There's always tension in this country, especially if you feel like in the last few years, but the new thing now is the idea of being vaccinated, and the Buffalo Bills are kind of a case study in the NFL. The Bills, let me set it up this way. The NFL, if you get to 85% vaccination on your roster, it allows you to relax some of the restrictions on your team. It just makes life a lot easier for the team, in addition to it makes it safer for everyone. But the Bills aren't really talking about it. They don't want to talk about it when they're asked about it. Quarterback Josh Allen and linebacker Tremaine Edmonds did not want to talk about the vaccines. And then Jordan Poyer said, according to the Buffalo News, the following. Real quick, before we start, I'm not going to be answering questions about vaccines, so if you guys can direct your questions all to football, I would love to answer them. All respect, I appreciate it. What is this? What's this all about, Greg? What's going on here?
I think they have been put in the spotlight because Josh Allen and especially Cole Beasley have been so vocal, and I think Poyer or a family member, I think it was his wife, you know, it was too. But Beasley was so vocal about essentially not believing the science and wanting
on
to
social media
do his own research. And Josh Allen essentially alluded to that too. Like if you don't want to answer the questions and you're saying it's private, it's pretty clear which direction you're going. And I'd like to think they actually huddled a little bit and said, we don't want this to be a problem within our team. And let's just shut it down in terms of the media as a story. At some point, though, it'll be a bigger deal because the rules, as you mentioned, Dan, are different depending on how vaccinated you are. And then when you get to the season, they really get different. Like if you're in the bye week and you're not vaccinated, you got to show up to get tested every day. And if not, you can go to Hawaii. You go with Jason Witten and Tony Romo and to Cabo. I think they just live there now. They just hang out, the four of them in Cabo, and you can do whatever you want. So that would seem to be like where the rubber hits the road there, where it's like, are they really going to stay away from it during the season when you get these advantages as a team? I don't know.
I'd struggle to think that by training camp that 15% of rosters players would not be vaccinated. But You know,
look at our country, though. I mean,
well, country, it's 63% are vaccinated or have had at least one shot right now. And tons of people have bailed on the second one. So, you know, there's just a, like last year, there's a human element to how it's being processed to some degree. And I mean, I guess, listen, like, it's not really fair that Josh Allen would be like picked apart by everyone for doing something different than we all did. But I totally get it. And the Bills are in a weird spot if like he refuses to answer those questions. To your point, Greg, it just simply suggests that he's against it.
Not only that, but then you think about the competitive advantages or disadvantages, you know, like Greg had, you know, mentioned it. I mean, when it comes to the coaching staff, they can't even be involved if they're not vaccinated. You know, there's like a clear separation. There's the masking that's involved. And there's also the vulnerability associated because, let's face it, according to the CDC, you know, you get vaccinated, the chance that you're infected and can spread are extremely low, which has, you know, led to the change in mask advising and everything else. Well, if you're unvaccinated and you contract COVID-19, guess what? You're stuck in where we were last year, which right. is you're out. And anybody who's near you who wasn't vaccinated is out. And if this is something that's prevalent more among one team, you're setting yourself up for issues going into the season.
I hate, and we don't want to go down this road too far, but I hate that this has become on some level a political side-taking scenario. It's very frustrating because it just, the science is there that this works. Everybody should get a shot, and if you're listening to the show,
have some consideration for your fellow man. I mean, we hear a lot about patriotic thoughts. It's like let's have some concern for other people.
All right. In other news, hit the trope alert, Ricky.
Trope alert. Trope alert. Trope alert. Trope alert.
Jared Goff has a fresh start with the Detroit Lions, and head coach Dan Campbell loves what he sees. He made about 5 throws yesterday that were just wow, Campbell said, that via the Detroit Free Press. Now, Mark, we went to Rams camp a few years back, and one thing that you jumped out is that boy can throw a football. That has never been an issue with Jared Goff, so it doesn't surprise me that he's throwing tight line drive spirals on target. That's how he became a number one overall pick. But unfortunately for Goff, the football at quarterback goes beyond that, and that's where he's gotten into trouble in the last couple of years.
Yeah, I guess it's in Detroit, it's more like who is he throwing it to when real games start? I mean, they are one of the thinner wide receiver groups out there. But I mean, this is the kind of stuff that I hear that goes in one ear and out the other. Jared Goff throwing good passes when there's no pass rush, like no scheming against his weaknesses. Okay, he's a great athlete. He's a supreme athlete. I don't think this should be surprising to any of us. That's why it is a trope.
Well, the trope is like, you know, disappointing player for other team, you know, is wowing in the offseason practices. Jared Goff can spin it. Let's pump him up.
Yeah.
We remember that scene in Hard Knocks, right? You know, where Sean McVay is sitting, or who was it? Was it Sean McVay or was it Jeff Fisher standing back? And
the
going,
Rams have been on so many NFL films properties that I've lost track.
Oh man, that's an NFL throw right there. Yeah, well, it's June.
Yeah, no, you know, I was thinking we'll save this for the Fantasy Spectacular coming up later this summer, but I wonder, they're going to be playing from behind a lot. Goff is probably going to get a season full of starts. There's not a lot of wide receivers. How about TJ Hockenson? Under the radar is a big ad. Tight end, very thin in fantasy.
He was great last year.
In recent years. All right, in other trope alert news.
Trope alert. Trope alert. Trope alert. Trope alert.
Hey, listen, Mac Jones is the new hot quarterback with all the swag with the Patriots. But do not forget that Cam Newton is a former MVP now in the second year of the Patriots system. And guess what? Offensive coordinator Josh McDaniels had this to say. He came back this year at a much different position. He has a different grasp of the offense, a different understanding of the terminology. Now we're working on refining the precision, the details. Okay. So what does that mean? He just had no idea what he was doing last year? What are we doing?
I mean, yeah, that's the year two. We get the guy gets the offense a little more. It's usually more about like
things
young
are slowing
players.
Down for me.
But it's right. also can be for free agents, especially it might be like a pandemic trope because you didn't have the offseason last year. And that part makes sense. I'm buying it.
I mean, also like they're a completely different offense. Like they, you know, you can read this in Greg's projected starters, but it's a stat that's out there. I mean, no team ran less 2 tight ends. They probably will be, you know, top 3 in the league with that this year. It's not like the same playbook. They got a whole bunch of different players.
Finally,
sit on that.
Finally in the news. Greg, on Tuesday's show, you were just talking about it. We were talking about how I'll see you at the crossroads. Well, you won't be lonely. I'll see you at the crossroads. I'm going to miss everybody, especially Uncle Charles. Chandler Jones, J.J. Watt, both at the crossroads. Well, popped up that Chandler Jones, you know, maybe connected to some trade rumors. And what did he do? Speaking of trope alerts, he deleted the Cardinals from his social media in its entirety. No more mentions of the Arizona Cardinals on Chandler Jones' social. Greg is looking it up right now. Whoa. He can't even believe it. He needs to get to the gram right now. What does it mean, Shooky? Is Chandler Jones on the way out? He certainly must be disgruntled.
I mean, I think athletes do this 70% of the time solely for the attention, as if they don't get enough. So I get pretty annoyed by stuff like this. But again, we are in June, so we need something to feed the beast. And if we're going to feed a controversy beast, it's definitely somebody wiping stuff out from their social media. Personally, I don't know if this really does mean he's disgruntled or if he's preparing for what could eventually be the inevitable, or if we just have some people who are just scrubbing social media timelines and just happen to look and say, oh, look, he doesn't mention his team anymore. Oh, no. Like, what if I deleted around the NFL writer?
No one would notice. What if I got rid
of that around the NFL writer out of my bio? Is everybody going to think I'm disgruntled? What if I'm just trying to save characters?
I think perhaps David Ely would ping you on Instant Messenger with a few questions. But
maybe Jones doesn't like all the pop J.J. Watt's getting as, like, Mr. Cardinal, because, you know, you see him at the Suns game. You know, J.J. Watt immediately is, like, always tweeting about the Suns and Phoenix sports. He's in the front row at the game, and it's like Chandler Jones is... It's like, what's up with me, you know? What about my shine?
There are also some whispers that it could be related to a trade for Julio Jones.
Ooh.
Jones for Jones. In fact, that came from our friend Jason Zumwalt. He texted us with some concerns about that.
So not a report. It's just Cardinal superfan Jason Zumwalt.
No, he didn't come up with that out of thin air. He said that, you know, the streets were talking that he's got his own... I guess chat rooms and areas that he hangs out in where this was becoming a thing. I'm not saying that it's from the Associated Press necessarily, but
hey, listen, Chandler Jones and a second for Julio Jones, but I don't know if that helps the Falcons' salary cap ish. I don't know.
Right.
I mean, love you, Jay. All right. By the way, if I scrubbed you guys from my social entirely, and then any reference to the ATN podcast, do you think that would earn like a subreddit post or something? Would that get a little pop? Mm.
Is Dan on his way out? Is he starting his own platform? The Dan Hansis Network?
It would just be throwback and the boys on your Instagram.
And squirrels.
Like, I think you might be squirrels. Like a little annoyed with I think in your mind, I mean, anyone would think this, that it's going to generate this sort of American groundswell of attention. It might just be a little bit less, or at least it would be like an hour of attention, and then people would move on to the next anti-drama. So I don't think it's worth it.
It's Chandler Jones, the same thing, only on a smaller scale, basically. Like 1 hour of people writing up a aggregated blog post about it.
Yeah, Shook deletes all of his around the NFL stuff. No one notices, and like a week later, he's like, "Can I put it back? Is that like, no one needed this?"
It's like when you post a picture on Instagram and delete it because it didn't get enough likes. Yeah, it's that kind of stuff. Nobody saw it. A tree falls in the woods, nobody hears it.
That's a great episode of Nick Shook, by the way. When you're social posting, you keep going back and expecting pop, and it doesn't get. You're a little shook there, Nick. Mm. I like that. All right, that's what's happening in the news.
Projected starters.
Autopsy.
We dig through. What's left of Greg's projected starter series? What work Greg did. And now it's upon us to look upon it on a cold slate. Take out the scalpel and other cutting devices. Poke around and see what's inside. Mark, it is gone.
I think one of the most, you know, so it's split up into eight divisions. And I noted this last week that I think one of the most intriguing entries is the AFC South, because there was a period, you know, when the Texans were rising with Deshaun Watson and, you know, the Colts had Phillip Rivers and you could look at the Titans as a team that was a Super Bowl threat. And then suddenly the Jacksonville Jaguars got Trevor Lawrence, that you might think that this division, after so many years in the past of having issues, had risen. I think the way that you've outlined what's happened in the AFC South, it's completely different. And I would think the one that caught my attention the most was the Colts. And just for a couple little things, I thought this was imaginative, because you mentioned the quarterback position, and we've talked about Carson Wentz a billion times. But if you want to talk about not a corpse, but someone that's been under the knife a lot, it is Carson Wentz, and his backup is Jacob Eason, who is completely untested. And it, you know, any one of these teams that lose their starters, you're in fair hot water, and you've a lot of, you can make some excuses. But that would be the floor falling out in a division they very clearly could win. And you made a note that why not reunite Frank Reich with none other than Nick Foles. It's too awkward, as you pointed out, but that would be one of the more intriguing things to happen in the offseason if you wanted to generate one more story. The other thing I thought about the Colts, because you noted they just, after years of getting better and better under Chris Ballard, that there's a pause on that. They did not get better this year. And I think if you're kind of casually watching football, you would say, but they have the best offensive line. Hands down, like, Carson Wentz is in the best situation because of their O-line. Now, they're not going to get Eric Fisher for, you know, we don't know, like, it could be weeks. But in general, like, they aren't the number one offensive line in the league. And you pointed out that they had taken a step back, and who knows where they are this season.
Offensive lines are so unpredictable. Like, they were seventh last year in Pro Football Focus, but it's just one of those things that, like, every play-by-play guy just says, because I don't know, he's heard other people say it. It's like, they're the best offensive line in the league. Now, they really weren't a year ago. They were good. They weren't maybe, like, dominant. And they're counting on, you know, they're counting on guys to step in right away and do things on both sides of the ball. Like, Kwity Paye has to come in and, I think, be a factor for them. They lost a lot on the defensive line. I'm not feeling the Colts.
You want to keep that in the division, you go to Houston and just look at their backfield. We know the Deshaun Watson situation. We know how they've thrown a lot of stuff at the wall to address that or prepare for plan B, you know, Tyrod Taylor, Jeff Driskel, Davis Mills, that draft pick. But you want to talk about throwing stuff at the wall and seeing if it sticks. Look at their running back room. There's seven guys on this list. Not one of them, to me, looks like your potential, like the definite lead back, because you got David Johnson, we know how they got him in the trade with DeAndre Hopkins. They signed Mark Ingram. They signed Philip Lindsay, who might have gotten a raw deal in Denver. And then Nick Caserio pulls one out of his New England bag and signs Rex Burkhead. Not to mention the other three guys on the list, Buddy Howell, Dontrell Hilliard, and Scottie Phillips. There's so many running backs in this room and no clear leader or direction. I mean, they could have them all battle it out, I guess, and see which ones survive, but I mean, I guess for this type of team, this is the best approach. It's definitely an intriguing, if not hilarious, approach.
I look at, they were on my list, the Texans. They have 2-15 written all over them if Tyrod's the quarterback.
Right.
And who knows if he even makes it through the season, and then you start going down the depth chart there. If
I feel like Tyrod is not even like...
My goodness.
I mean, I guess he is high up on their concerns. But there are position groups that I think are worse, you know, compared to league average. You know, I counted three defensive players that I know are starting, and like the rest of the defense is just total competition.
I think if anything though, like I look at the Texans as a team, and there's a lot of like delusions of grandeur running around inside that organization. But I don't think that extends to the general manager, who went out and signed a ton of people to one-year deals because it's a patch year, and I think they knew that. And it's like they're gonna look a whole lot different a year from now and start to get some draft picks back. But it's going to be a really ugly autumn.
I'll move over to the AFC West, where Greg had rightly pointed out that there are some questions on that offense, which is, you know, kind of a bummer. You don't want there to be questions about the offense because you have this fantastic young quarterback in Justin Herbert coming off a record-breaking rookie season, but now you have him on a new offense. Joe Lombardi is the new offensive coordinator. The offensive line should be better, but yeah, the skill group, that is on my radar. Keenan Allen needs to stay healthy here. Hunter Henry's gone.
Jared Cook in 2021. Like everyone else, I've been sucked into Jared Cook for a bunch of years, like 2018 through 2020, maybe even before that, 2017 maybe. But at this point, you kind of know what you're going to get. Mike Williams, another guy, very up and down. And, you know, they picked up his fifth year option. They're hoping he has a big breakthrough year. Josh Palmer there, it's an unproven guy. Julio Jones, as you point out, Greg, makes a lot of sense there, but the Chargers probably aren't going to do that cool thing for their fan base. So this is what you're going to get. You know, they need Keenan to stay healthy. Austin Eckler's got to stay healthy, or this could go sideways.
Ooh, yeah. Autopsy. Look underneath the curtain with the Chargers. I think it's all like writing out of fear of things going wrong for Herbert, because I like Herbert so much, and I've seen them try to rebuild these offensive lines before, and it does all look great on paper. It's a little hard to imagine that they don't improve to average with the personnel they brought in, but I don't know. Something always goes wrong. And then this week, you know, Lombardi was talking about that, you know, he thinks Mike Williams is going to have big numbers. You know, that raised a lot of fantasy alarms, because essentially Mike Williams playing the X is like Michael Thomas in the Saints offense. That's more or less what Joe Lombardi's trying to do. He's not trying to reinvent the wheel. The Saints run a pretty conventional but effective NFL offense. And if Mike Williams is that guy that they're relying on to count, like, to catch like 90 or 100 balls, I don't know. That just feels like a lot to be counting on.
They're not really the same player. And I mean, like, Mike Williams, like 2 years ago, led the league in yards per catch. I mean, he had a 1,000-yard season. He's never had more than 50 catches, though, in any year, and he's had some durability issues. So it's kind of a projection to suddenly say he's our Michael Thomas. I mean, we will see.
Not only that, but I also worry about their depth, because if there's one team that's been bitten by the injury bug pretty bad on the offensive side of the ball the last 3 to 5 years, it's them. Keenan Allen being one year, and if that happened again, whether it was him or Mike Williams or somebody else, God forbid, they're in a world of trouble if that happens.
Right, Lombardi's not scheming you out of injury problems, I don't feel like.
In case you're just joining us, this is
projected starters.
Autopsy. What else you got?
Is it worth it? Was it worth it, Dan? You've been pushing this projected starters seg.
I think the drop, you know, I'm up to drop. I've used it 3 times now, and I think that's pushing us over the finish line right now.
I gotta say, weave in some medical, like, sort of autopsy type talk into it.
I'll throw one in, maybe. Just
go for it. All right, Greg, you want to put on your Dr. Michael Bodden cap? Go ahead, in your blue scrubs.
Or how about that? Who's that quack that everyone gets on, you know, that everyone retweets despite him getting, like, you know, fired from the Chargers and kicked out of the NFL and losing his medical license? Yeah.
Chowie.
Devin Bush is a guy coming off of a major injury. And just because we haven't mentioned his name all offseason, he does strike me as this guy. Like, everyone thinks Devin Bush is already Devin White or Roquan Smith, and they're just like, okay, you're going to get Devin Bush back, and like, that's going to really help. The history of the Steelers defense at inside linebacker is incredible. It's like, I haven't seen that out of Devin Bush. Like, he is a flashy player that you see with splash plays. I don't know if he's been particularly effective, and he's coming off of a major injury, and that is a thin position for the Steelers. If you want to pick on their defense, their defense was number one in DVOA last year. It was a good defense, but they've lost a couple people, and they need Devin Bush to take a big step. And people are just kind of assuming it's going to happen. It's like, I got to see that happen.
I mean, also, I think they're thin at cornerback. I'll stay in the AFC North, and, you know, if you want to talk about a team that could be experiencing some shortness of breath, maybe even, you know, heart issues if they don't get production at the pass rushing position, it could be the Ravens. And Greg points out that, you know, every year it feels like they lose their number one dude. And like, that happened again. But they now have Tyus Bowser, Pernell McPhee, and Jalen Ferguson as their lead dudes, who last year, and they've, you know, they have the rookie too, but last year those guys combined for 7 sacks. So you're asking, and the Ravens aren't necessarily like, when you're a rookie, jump in and play as much as you normally would. Like, they kind of slow bake them. So they're going to need help there. I also look at their backup quarterback position. If anything happens to Lamar Jackson, and I guess, like, you know, maybe it's cliche to say you worry about Lamar Jackson getting injured, but he's that kind of a quarterback. Your backup is Trace McSorley, who I like is like maybe a little gadget type player here or there. But I wonder if Eric DaCosta, who is always an active GM, might look for some veterans in both of those spots, you know, heading towards the end of training camp to patch that up.
I think we got a glimpse of what the Ravens would look like with Trace McSorley in that Monday night game against the Browns late when Lamar Jackson had to run to the locker room. Thankfully, he is able to overcome the quote-unquote cramps and come back in time to lead them to victory. But you wouldn't want to be caught in that situation.
You guys were feeling good when Trace McSorley was out there. He did make like one throw. Yeah. But after that, it pretty much bogged down. Browns fans were just where they were feeling themselves. And then there comes Lamar running out of the bathroom. Oh, what a day. That really turned into like the game of the year in the NFL.
Yeah.
Toilet paper hanging out of his pants. Hero ball. That was not a great ending for the Browns and their fans. But that was great theater, that whole drama. The whole game was really
If anything, you could say the Browns like answered a lot of doubters on their offense too, but it was
Lamar was playing the Browns. How did I not connect that there point?
I'm gonna keep this in the AFC North and go back to Pittsburgh. Real quick, just because Greg, you brought up Devin Bush. Another defensive situation that I think is worth watching is TJ Watt's effectiveness now that Bud Dupree is not opposite him. After Bud Dupree got hurt last year, his pressure percentage, according to Next Gen, dropped by like 10%, which was significant because he was way up there.
That's your angle. You're the Next Gen guy. You've staked that as your corner, your Next Gen. Cynthia's there too. I don't know if there's a little bit of
No, we're friendly. We're the same team.
Friendly on the surface, but there's...
She has her supercomputer. She's not just leaning on Next Gen.
You've had some disparaging comments about the supercomputer at least pass through your mind. No. You haven't shared them in public.
I mean, I got a laptop. We're all right. We're working
on it. We'll have Cynthia on soon. It's been on my list of to-dos, too, to answer all the slights that Nick is throwing
out. Yeah, and all the mental ones. Also, keeping it in Pittsburgh, their offensive line for me is still a concern. I recall draft day. And Aditi's report, which was that it was clear that they knew they needed offensive line help, but they liked to blend their board and need at the same time. And they went with Najee Harris in the first round. And, on paper, you're like, well, that's an upgrade over James Conner. But I look at that starting five and I'm not super encouraged. I know some people are bullish on Kevin Dotson at left guard. They drafted a center in the third round, Kendrick Green. We'll see if he starts. And you have David DeCastro, but I'm not happy about their tackles from this point right now. And another Next Gen dive real quick. The Steelers were second to last in the league in expected rushing yards per attempt, which basically measures how effective their offensive line is. The only team that was worse than them was the Browns. But the difference between the Browns and them was the Browns running backs overcame that consistently. They posted the best rushing yards over expectation per attempt in the entire NFL. The Steelers, and that was at plus 1.15 yards per attempt. So those running backs were consistently exceeding expectation and doing their job to a very high degree. The Steelers were at negative 0.01 yards per attempt. So their running backs were ineffective, and their offensive line was also ineffective. So if you run back a line that looks very similar this year, you add Najee Harris, that's a lot to put on the shoulders of a rookie who does have a lot of mileage on him coming out of Alabama. So I think that's going to be a big thing to watch for the Steelers this year and the chances for their offense.
And if we're carving up the AFC North, I might as well plug in on the Bengals here. And Greg, you pointed it out, and it makes sense. There's potential here for this offense to take a big jump. Now, the Joe Burrow ACL situation, and he ripped up his knee, something fierce. And it's good that he's back practicing in OTAs, and you hope he's close to the same guy. There's a bit of a projection here that he makes the second-year leap and improves as a player if the knee cooperates. And then you have, you got Ja'Marr Chase there now. You have Tyler Boyd, underrated guy, T. Higgins, Joe Mixon at running back. And I don't know what to take from the Joe Mixon experience at this point, but we know he's fantastically talented and he still has prime years ahead of him. The offensive line, as you point out, Greg, maybe Penei Sewell would have been the guy, a logical pick there, but you know what? There are pieces there that are developing. If the offensive line gets better, and they did bring in Riley Reiff, of course, there to help on that end, with these weapons and Burrow's potential, I'm not saying there's going to be four teams in the AFC North with 9+ wins. I just think that Cincinnati might muck some things up. The bullies like Sessler and the Browns looking down and pointing and laughing at them, they might not be doing that if this team comes together a little quickly, more quickly than people anticipate.
I mean, a year ago, I said that I thought Zach Taylor had a chance to be coach of the year. I think a lot of it comes down to the specialness that they believe Zach Taylor brings. But I don't think the Bengals are a 2 or 3 win team. They they have a pretty good roster on offense. They should be a team that goes out and, you know, they beat Tennessee last year. That's the one game I look at where I thought you kind of got a glimpse. Bad teams give you a little glimpse of what they can be with Burrow healthy and all that business. They lost their quarterback. The floor fell out. They've been ravaged by injuries really as much as any team in that division or that conference over the last couple of years. You haven't really had a chance to see what they can be. They can win 8 games.
I don't know if the defense is going to be worth a damn there, and that's a problem, and we've talked about the coaching staff on this show. But their offense, I think, can keep them in games.
I would take that young skill group, not counting quarterbacks. I guess I'm going like just running back receiver group of young players over any in the NFL. I can't. I mean, Dallas would be in the mix. I mean, there'd be other teams in the mix, but I think I would take that because I just love T. Higgins so much, and I'm kind of assuming Ja'Marr Chase is going to be awesome. But I did notice kind of doing this exercise, the Bengals have completely changed their approach of like player acquisition. I don't know if it's going to work, but they were the number one team in terms of draft and development in the NFL. Year after year, they dominated this stat, which was just like, how many snaps did you have from players he drafted? They would be like far and away ahead of the entire NFL. Now, was that working particularly? It was working okay. They were, you know, they were making the playoffs and losing usually under Marvin Lewis. Now you look at their defense, it's all free agents from other places that, you know, were mostly letdowns in at least at some points, like DJ Reader, Ogunjobi, Hendrickson, Von Bell, Awuzie from Dallas. You got Trey Waynes, Mike Hilton came in. Like, that is just a lot of guys from other places, and you're counting on Lou Albano to just make it work. That Captain. Usually doesn't work. Everyone says like the middle class of free agency is kind of dead. You know, it's either like start, but except for the Bengals, they are all about the middle class.
I'd have to think agency. Green Bay would be up there too, but I can already see a trend. I can already tell what's going to happen on this show if Cleveland starts out like 1-3 or 1-4 or 2-4. It's like, here we are. Cleveland had one nice season and everyone's over it. Now it's like it's an off season where they're being a little overrated. Now at this point, it's June. People are tired of that. And it's going to be exhaustion set in. You know, the Saints could be good for like 18 years in a row. The Packers can be good for 25. But Cleveland had their one season. Now let's have the Bengals come nip them in the butt and, you know, take them from fourth to third to fourth place. And the Steelers suddenly are seeming like they're so much better than Cleveland. And we just trust the Ravens and the whole, you know what? That's why I have Nick Shook, who's about 6'3" and built of bricks, to start throwing punches if you guys get too, you know, loose on this front. You better keep your traps closed. I'm a little annoyed.
I mean, Mark, we've been prepared for this. We've been steeled by the year that was 2019. I'll tell you what, the vitriol that I endured online while working for the Browns as they went down in a massive ball of flames, it was unlike anything I've ever experienced working here and ranking players and upsetting fans because their guy's ninth when he should be second in their opinion. So people love for the hype machine to go down and crash and burn. But even if they did start 1-3, it's a long season. Remember, they got blown out in week one last year.
I'm sure you guys will be totally calm on a Sunday night podcast if they're 1-3. You'll just be, it's a long season, very measured. All your points about us getting on you for the Browns and Mark, like those are Thursday show stuff. By then, you'll have calmed down a little bit. I think I'll be too afraid on Sunday nights. Like, we know not to.
It's all about you got to look in the eyes. You got to see where the Sessler eyes are at before you make any comments at all. But there is, you know, there's being a Browns fan right now. Yes, you have to deal with the expectations. But on the plus side, like, well, draft time as an example, it's like everyone is just genuflecting at the altar of the Cleveland Browns that everything they do is genius. So if you're going to get that type of positive buzz around your organization, you got to deal with the expectation heat that comes with it. It's part of the price.
I had this very weird dream. I will not take more than a minute on this. Last night, it's one of those ones where you wake up and it's like 5:12 in the morning and like you have no idea who you are. But I was at an airport with you, Dan, and we were in this like insane chase to try to find luggage. And I was trying to get Kevin Stefanski's luggage for him, and I was meant to then take it to the Browns complex, but I couldn't find it, and I kept getting lost, and it was snowing out, and then you were like, hey man, I'm good. Like, we were going to a hotel, and you're like, I found my baggage, so are you good? Like, can you figure this out? I'm like, I guess so, and I'm walking around with this like sort of rather like strange colorful bag that belongs to Kevin Stefanski, and then the dream ended. I didn't fulfill the journey on any level. What does the dream book say about that?
You're Kevin Stefanski's like jockey? is bad boy.
I think I was like the guy that would be like, hey, can you do us a favor? Can you just, you know, Stefanski's got to go. Go bring his luggage to the complex and don't forget anything. And I was like, There was baggage everywhere. People were wearing masks, not wearing masks.
By the way, you just explained
masks.
Nick Shook's final day with the Cleveland Browns.
That may be true.
Stefanski's like, I've got some sensitive materials coming in from Nicaragua. Can you call up Sessler to pick it up?
That's the dream book would say that that's Mark dealing with the stress and weight of carrying the Browns bag on the national perspective and dealing with the fire from you guys and the pressure. And it's getting to him and it's getting into his subconscious and the season can't get here
all
any
that.
Slower.
I could not.
I think that's well assessed.
Buy into that anymore. I have one last one before we, if anybody else jumps in, go ahead, jump in. But, you know, Greg, I don't know. Listen, we do a lot of stuff together on television and on this podcast. And so I've heard this a lot and I've read this now in your piece of record on the 2021 season upcoming projected starters. I need receipts on this Russell Wilson league MVP promotion. This theory or this thing you've been right. propagating for months in digital print.
It was like a Sunday night football game where it was like, it was a pregame interview and it was all about in all the media outlets saying how he's never received an MVP vote. Like that, you know, that was all part of it.
Yeah, but your theory here, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that Russell Wilson spearheaded this media narrative that right? That's what you're saying. You're calling it a promotion that he was running behind the scenes.
I mean,
yes or no?
Yeah, pretty much that he was contributing to
it. I want receipts.
He talked publicly about like what an MVP would mean to him and that he wants to be the greatest in the game and like that is what he wants.
He was asked about it, I'm sure. Unless you could point you bring it up enough that I need proof at this point that he was actually doing this.
I don't want to vote. More importantly, I want to win the award, Wilson said September 25th. I mean, what are you asking me here? He was doing it. He's got the PR arm. I stand by it.
I do like you also ended your Seahawks write-up with this little blurb. Also popular with Seahawks fans, any shout-out to their status as a special breed of humanity, more knowledgeable and inexplicable than any other collection of people on Earth. What are you up to over there, Rosenthal?
Yeah, what's that about?
Just messing around.
You also jumped off their corner last year.
Yeah. Well,
all connected.
Yeah, they didn't like that. And they just like the Seahawks fans, they do have a great Twitter presence. They're smart. They're weird. But they don't like to hear that any other fan base could also have like a smart, weird fan base. They want to feel special. And once you say like, okay, I'm not really feeling them as a Super Bowl team this year, then they come at you.
Mark it down. June 3rd, 2021, Greg Rosenthal officially became fatigued with Seahawks and Seahawks Twitter.
Yeah. keep the 12s weird. T-shirt should read. Anybody else before we close out this segment, which by the way has a title, and that title is
Projected Starters
Autopsy.
It's the rule of fours. Most people think, oh, three times you do it, that's the peak comedic efficiency. No, four, five, six, seven, eight.
I will say, my girlfriend, which you guys have love to discuss many times in this podcast in the past, she's in physical therapy school, and last semester she had to dissect a cadaver, which meant that she was studying a lot of images of, like, you know, formaldehyde preserved dead humans and their various tissues. And every time I hear that drop, I just think about looking over my shoulder at her computer screen and seeing nerves and hearts and brains and all this gruesome stuff.
Was it a man or a woman that she had to cut open and explore?
It was a man, and I'll never forget, she came home one day and said, today I shaved the back fat off of a man.
Oh!
I have other questions as well.
Why are you laughing? It is like the least surprising thing.
That question just disturbed me.
I know, me too. It was like it was amazing and also the least surprising part of this podcast.
Like
Mark's mind went immediately.
And if it is a woman, do you know where I can go to get one?
No, I just, you know, there are some follow-up questions. But that's for one of your other podcasts, Nick. But I maybe could send some questions in.
I can't think of a title to loop in dissection of cadavers, but we'll get there. I have one last one, and it's the Raiders.
Oh, wow.
And their secondary, just because it's not necessarily much different on paper, but my big question mark is Damon Arnette. You know, you spend a high pick on him, and he was a non-factor last year. He dealt with injuries. But after Mike Mayock spent the offseason trashing their defense, and then they, you know, put some effort toward it, they drafted safety Trevon Merrig. I need to see, I don't know what to expect from this group. I mean, it's not necessarily that I don't know who is projected to be the starters, but I have no idea what they're going to get, other than that Jonathan Abram is going to be in the box more, and he already plays like a psychopath, so we might as well, you know, enjoy him being around the ball more.
I mean, he might have been the biggest problem in a defense full of them. I'm glad you brought them up, just because I kind of forgot about Casey Hayward. They signed Casey Hayward. He might be their slot guy. But I mentioned, I am probably basing this on like too small of a sample size and everything, but when I watched Damon Arnette last year, I thought he looked pretty good. I know he did not test out well, and he gave up some big plays, but him and Trayvon Mullen, like, I thought they have shown some things, and young cornerbacks are, it's tough, man. It is tough to come into the NFL as a young cornerback. And I think both of them actually have flashed a lot. Like, people think they're busts, and I thought both of them have shown some things. So it wouldn't shock me if those two guys improved.
Yeah, I definitely like Mullins more than Arnette, but I mean, Mullins has a little bit more of a you know, sample size so far. So
it's, like, it's interesting. Trust Gus Bradley to put it all together. I'm not so sure.
All right, good stuff. And check it out, NFL.com/projected starters. It's kind of pretty much evergreen content. You could read it now.
Projected starters.
Autopsy. That. You could read it now. You could read it a month from now. And you'll kind of be up to date.
That's what I told Ali. There. I'm done until the season. This works as a season preview.
I didn't tell Ali. I'm just hiding. I am unreachable.
I have more content to get to Ali today.
You'll All learn right. in time.
As the rule of fives, as promised, on Tuesday we asked for some reviews and stars over on iTunes. Checked it out, went over to the iTunes, got a decent amount. I got to be honest with you, Greg. You appealed to the audience.
They didn't listen.
we got a nice handful, but I was hoping for many because, again, it's the only thing we ask for.
Well, that's
is that true?
It's underwhelming.
So maybe it's not. Maybe again, guys,
adoration, five attention,
stars. Five love. Stars. Leave a review. Yeah. That's all we ask. All right, let's get into it. This one from this from CElko3. Love the hosts. Not enough Colts. 5 stars. Apparently, the way for a small market team to make the pod each week is to sign Teddy Bridgewater. That said, a great podcast, even in the off season. Up next,
wait
Mark Sessler, 2024, 5 stars. I enjoy Mark's Browns fandom, wit, and literacy. Nice comment there, Mark.
Oh, I wrote that, you think?
Eric Stabe.
It's Mark's brother, Eric Sessler.
Zach Attack Curie, longtime listener, first-time reviewer. The NFL is lucky to have these heroes making podcasts for them when they could easily break off on their own and bankroll the best independent NFL podcast network via Patreon. Pay the heroes, Slammer.
Whoa, whoa.
Are you listening, employer?
Up next, Miss My Uncle Charles. Miss My Uncle Charles. Just here for the Bone Thugs talk.
People love that. It was a missed opportunity, Shook, without you on the show. You know, the guys make jokes that I like rap. You like rap even more. And you are a Clevelander. Mm-hmm. So, Bone Thugs, if the floor is yours if you have anything to say about them.
Well, I will say this, and this is going to date myself, but Bone Thugs was hot when I was like a kid.
Well, I know that, but I don't think you maybe listened to him.
Oh,
at some
of course.
Point.
Absolutely. No doubt about it. Not so much in the last couple years, but they're definitely in the rotation every once in a while.
That's lukewarm.
By the way, there's
Bone Thugs is great.
There's no kind of joshing you about your rap enjoyment. It's just simply pointed out on the show, Greg likes rap.
Yeah.
It's factual.
I like some of it, too. Not at your level.
I like, you know, lesbian indie rock, too, but that doesn't get its own little, you know, pop.
It doesn't. And maybe it should. All right, up next. favorite podcast ever from MH Class of 83. June 2021, and I listen to a fair amount of podcasts, mostly football, great NFL insight with just the right levity. The different personalities bounce off each other perfectly. Erica, Ricky, jump in here. Erica is the finishing touch, occasionally bringing them all back to earth without any damper on the amusement. Go, Erica. I hope this podcast carries on just as it is for my lifetime, if the universe would be so kind. All the best for healing heart, all of you.
Wow, that was so nice.
That was very nice.
Why do we not assume that Erica wrote that when you're immediately suggesting that a pro-Mark one was written by myself?
Up next, smart with NFL, comma, woke ideology. 2 stars out of 5. Wow. Smart NFL analysts, if you brush off the woke rhetoric they spew when they veer away from sports, I can't stomach the ignorance on real world matters. No one cares about your opinions on vaccines and politics. You're losing listeners because of it. Wake up, guys. Trump voters and people who don't want to get vaccinated are in every room you walk in. Maybe time to show them a little respect. All caps. Bye.
So just being in a room that you walk in is worthy of respect? No. If you just use the term woke, we don't need you. It's a red flag.
He jumped out just in time. Today's episode touched on things he finds unpleasant. So.
Yeah, I was going to say, he definitely tuned out after about the first 10 minutes today.
Let Mark cook from Vado All Right. I listen to this podcast more than I watch the NFL. I mean, there's not a better selling point for our show. And finally, best podcast around. Parentheticals in the tone of Dan. My favorite podcast by far, and in quarantine, I dabbled in many. I listen to each episode as soon as I can on the day it comes out. Love everything you do. I recently lost a close friend, and your openness and friendship, talking about Chris, really helps me through it. I would call him Wes, but that seems like a nickname you have to earn. I'm just a lowly listener. That is not true. Wes was down to be called Wes by anyone. I don't want to lessen my compliment with an NFL question. I'd have some, but I'd rather just leave a great review. Oh, that's very nice. Williams.
Thank you, William. Yeah. And you undersold it. These were good reviews. I assumed you maybe picked the best of them, so there were even more. But good job. I think we can do better. Maybe come back strong again. And we'll do it again some other time.
Yeah, we call for more reviews. Send us your reviews and we will read them on the air potentially. All right. Shook. Oh, before we say goodbye, Ricky, something very exciting. Speaking of vanity projects, you have something to share.
Yes. Yeah, so the broadcast, my podcast that I do with Emma, got signed by All Things Comedy. So we're going to be on the ATC network.
Ooh, well done, yeah. Ricky.
All right.
Big time.
Really excited. So if the ATN listeners want to do me a little favor and go over there and subscribe or check out an episode, there's episodes, actually not Nick, but everyone else in here that you guys have your own episodes, and they're great. We wrote a funny script where Mark read basically him going crazy and getting a huge tattoo of Baker Mayfield after they win the Super Bowl. So a little foreshadowing about what life would be like. I think it's great. But yeah, I'm excited.
Congratulations.
Wait, so you're now being paid now for the show. Correct.
Well, yeah, ad sales potentially.
Any retroactive kickbacks to the people
I think the between the lines there.
Yeah. Right.
Well.
But yeah, Mark, though, if you go, pump up your own episode, I can work something out for you.
Okay.
Venmo $12 or something.
When the Browns do win the Super Bowl, we should have a listening party to that episode. Compare it with reality. It'll be fun.
Good job, Ricky. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Hard work pays off.
Really excited.
Thanks, guys. The broadcast. Check out JRVP. Check out the throwback podcast. My buddy Bob, who I do the show with, kills me. He absolutely destroys me for never promoting the show. And I say, listen, I like to keep my world separate whenever possible. But since everyone else is getting their plugs in, I will mention it and I'll make sure he knows that I did. And the listeners will as well, I imagine.
Well, let's give Bob's show a pop too, because my kids were literally, I'm not exaggerating, counting down the days before Lego Masters came back. And you know, we had that DVR'd. Bob's working on Lego Masters. We had it DVR'd, and first thing, you know, get home from school, it's
that's on. A total hit,
it's
and
a
I
huge
think our
Lego
house too.
Masters house.
Yeah,
I like that. Bob is a producer on the show, and he works very closely with Will Arnett, the host. I can't share any of the stories that I've heard, but it's very interesting to learn what goes on inside the Hollywood machine with someone on the edges of the Illuminati. Now, you wouldn't think Arnett was on the edges. But he's there.
Exclusive club.
Whoa.
I'm intrigued.
That was insane.
What, did I oversell it? It's just, you know, it's you get a good peek into the show business world.
That's I was kind of wondering, like, the photos of him with all the Legos behind. I'm like, how did he get that, you know? You got to do some bartering behind the scenes, you know, to make that happen. Which any Illuminati people out there, I'm willing to have a conversation.
Oh, Ricky, this is not a good look for you.
No?
Wait, you'll give up anything to be inside the circle?
Yeah.
Your quest for fame is just endless.
It is.
And it's leaving a path of destruction in its wake.
Like, what do I have to do to get a yacht? Like, could it be that bad?
Just ask Dad.
That's
your quickest route.
All right. Yes, check out Ricky's show, The Broadcast.
Hey, fuck you, Greg.
And Nick Shook, you've done it again. You've said it all. And thank you for joining us today. And look forward to having you on the show again soon. And, of course, during the regular season as well.
Yeah, certainly. Love being on. Love being around you guys, even though, you know, we're remotely, you know, not quite hanging out in L.A. But, it's been a blast as always. So thanks.
Thanks, Shooky.
Yep.
Thank you, Shooky. All right. This is Dan Hansa signing off for the Quiet Storm, the old boss, the unshookable Nick Shook. What did I think? I had like a really bad nickname that everyone hated. Now I'm forgetting it. Damn it. We'll come
back.
It
was something inappropriate, like the pipe.
Oh, the pipe. Yeah. The pipe. The pipe.
Did not catch on.
I'm trying to get this pipe. Ricky Hollywood. Check out the Around the NFL broadcast Friday on the network right after Good Morning Football. Until then, heed the call.